KLYT Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
ABQ Connect is sponsored in part by Bosque Home Services, heating, cooling, plumbing, roofing, and restoration services. 505-444-7200. That's 505-444-7200. Or on the web at HVACAlbuquerqueNM.com. Bosque Home Services, locally grown, locally owned. Thank you for your support of KLYT and our show, ABQ Connect.
Well, thank you, Steve Ryman, for bringing us on the air, and thank you for listening to us here today on ABQ Connect. Paul Gessing, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation in studio. Paul, happy 2022, my friend.
Happy New Year, yeah.
I'm wishing you that in the same month the legislative session starts. Are those congruent?
They're always congruent because the legislature always convenes in the early part of whatever year we are in. I guess the good news for us this year is that it's only for 30 days, although we had a 60-day session and two special sessions during 2021.
Yeah, talk to us about the December special session.
Yeah, that was the redistricting session. That happens once every 10 years. The prime objective is to draw redistricting lines for congressional seats, for the legislature, and really make sure that population adjustments for New Mexico and the way people are moving around our state are taken into account. That's constitutional. It happens in every state, and they did that job. In terms of the actual maps drawn, I think there's a fair amount of consternation, certainly among Republicans, in certain areas of the state as well. The congressional maps were pretty radically changed. In fact, I live on the west side near Coors, and under the initial map, it looked like I was going to be drawn into the Yvette Harrell southern district. Her district, she lost a lot of southeast New Mexico. This is Brian Egolf making good. Brian Egolf, Speaker of the House, making good on his promise to come after Yvette Harrell's district because she was a Republican in a blue state and won that seat. And so he made a lot more of northern New Mexico or Albuquerque suburbs in Congressional District 2. And now it's like basically kind of UNSER. But still, a lot of people on the west.
But Paul, I have to stop you there because, yeah, of course, I'm real familiar with Hobbs, New Mexico, in the southeast part of the state.
Right.
I'd know Hobbs because of their storied basketball program. Spent a lot of time down there in Tasker Arena. But aren't our representatives supposed to be representing their constituents? How are Yvette's constituents now all the way up into Albuquerque and not just the southeast corner of the state?
Well, redistricting is an inherently political process. Now, to listen to the national media and often the Biden administration tell it, the only people who are partisan in the way they draw the lines are Republicans, especially in southern states like Texas, where they think that they are going to draw maps that no Democrat could ever win, and that it'll be unfair to minority groups. But in the Supreme Court has repeatedly said this is an inherently partisan process. And in New Mexico, it's an inherently partisan process, especially now that we don't have Susana Martinez, who was around the last time, or Gary Johnson, who was in office the last time before that, for redistricting. So the Democrats controlled it. They want to go after Yvette Harrell. They pretty much have the capability to do so. Now, they have to use the numbers that we have. The people voting and their voting patterns, et cetera, are as they are. So Yvette Harrell's seat is not unwinnable for Yvette Harrell, nor is Congressional District 1, which typically we've been like a sandwich here in New Mexico. You've had a Northern District 3, you've had a Southern District 2, and then you've had the juicy nougaty middle of Albuquerque and Torrance County sometimes. Well, District 1 now, that's Melanie Stansbury. That's much of the eastern part of Albuquerque. That's going to extend much further south and east all the way to Roswell and some of those towns. And then you have the Northern District also coming back down south and taking parts of Hobbs and Roswell as well. Now, handicapping all this, all three of these in a quote-unquote average year would be Democrat seats. However, the margins are not that big in District 2 or 1 and 3. So Stansbury's seat is a lot more competitive. Her former colleagues in the legislature didn't give her many favors in terms of campaigning. They dramatically expanded the geographical area that she represents, and they gave her a lot more Republican voters in the southeastern part of the state. Yvette Harrell, she's going to have to win in a more Democrat-minded state than she was previously in. But, you know, voting patterns change, and right now, if anything, Republicans have the wind in their backs, and they've got to be thinking that two of the seats they could potentially pull off victories in. We'll see. You know, that's coming November of this year. And, of course, the legislative seats are drawn as well.
Yeah. So, Paul, there was some other thing. That special session was called specifically for redistricting. But it I understand was. That they considered some other legislation like medical malpractice.
Yes, they did. And it's been a while since I've discussed all the details, but the gist of it is that the Democratic Party, one of their core constituencies, is trial attorneys. And New Mexico exhibits itself as a blue state, with Albuquerque as a blue city, in part by the proliferation of the Ron Bells of this world. Nothing against Ron Bell or Keller and Keller, but we see the buildings, we see the ads. And that is a sign of a state with a very quote-unquote liberal rule of law for the trial bar. It tends to have big payouts, and it's pretty easy to sue people for damages around here relative to other states. And those people contribute heavily to the Democratic Party, and in this case, medical malpractice issues. So what you're balancing essentially with medical malpractice reform is, do you want more doctors or do you want bigger paydays for the trial bar? Now, in my humble opinion, I generally prefer more doctors. I don't want them unaccountable. But New Mexico, the legislature, the Democrats passed a law in 2021, so the 60-day session, to give higher limits for certain cases, certain entities, hospitals and whatnot, big medical practices that will be sued under, you know, medical malpractice. You think something was done inappropriately or not done or whatever. And that was already causing threats from doctors that they were going to take off and move out of New Mexico to places that had more reasonable medical malpractice insurance and liability reform. So the session involved kind of a bit of a compromise to address the issue, to at least temporarily keep some of those rates down and hopefully keep the doctors. Of course, in the future, few years from now, you're going to see those prices go up. So this problem is not eliminated by any stretch of the imagination.
So as we go through all of these things, we have this three-page list of all these things Paul provides me as notes to
just
prepare for the show. Just three today in 14 fonts so I can read it. Because I'm never smart enough to remember my glasses as you are. But the reason I bring that up is because we can't exhaustively go through all of this information, but I want to point our listeners to the RioGrandeFoundation.org, nonprofit organization, think tank. You try to address things of concerns of liberty and freedom, and you like to challenge the politicians to try to take away those liberties and freedoms.
Yeah, we are pro-individual freedom, and we do advocate for that by trying to limit government, because government, I believe the founding fathers, I don't know who it was, said it's a lot like fire. You know, a fire is a useful tool if it's kept in a fireplace and kept in a limited environment. But that same fire can also burn them down your house and put you out of a home. So that's why limited government is the watchword for the founding fathers. And we just take our views, broadly speaking, from the founders and the ideas that people like them have come up with in the last 220, 30 years.
Paul, I was just reading in the journal yesterday that the state is actually considering having state-run utilities. That's long time down the list, but I thought it might be appropriate to talk about that right now, because that's one of the things that I think you would say, would take away our liberties to have the government running our utilities.
That is basically, you know, the textbook definition of socialism, yes. and that's not to say that PNM, as it's currently constituted, is some kind of dynamic free market enterprise. They are a government-regulated monopoly. Now, the group that's behind all this is called New Energy Economy. They are, like, the more radical version of the Sierra Club. They're a very, very left-wing oriented environmental group. They have long wanted to get rid of private utilities. Now, from a certain perspective, the way our utilities work are perfect for that ilk, that kind of left-wing approach, because you have a allegedly private company that does make profit for its shareholders, and there's a lot of PNM shareholders out there, but those rules and regulations that they live under are so stringent and designed by the legislature and the PRC, and it makes operating very difficult, but it also gives them a guaranteed profit. Now, to take one step back, New Energy Economy, to their credit, I think, although we never took a position one way or the other, was leading the charge against the Avangrid PNM merger. You've read about it. You've seen TV ads. You've heard a lot of conversations. Whether that merger was supposed to go through or not was something of a big issue. New Energy Economy was the lead organization saying no. PRC, I think recently enough that maybe we've talked since then, but not, I don't know, PRC, the Public Regulation Commission, an elected body in New Mexico as it currently stands, they regulate the utilities. They said, no, this should not happen. And this was a 5-0 decision, pretty bipartisan, across partisan boundaries. And they said, no, this is not a good deal for taxpayers, for ratepayers and the utility in the state of New Mexico. So New Energy Economy has come along, and they subsequently now are kind of pushing for their end game, which is to put the state of New Mexico in control of not just PNM, but all utilities operating in the state of New Mexico. The step that they are embarking upon that first is a study by the Public Regulation Commission. They have proposed, and 15 to 20 legislators, Democrats, very liberal, have proposed the idea of this PRC doing a study to see if this would be doable. So you're going to have, if it were to come to pass, which were many steps from that, but the state of New Mexico would either have to buy for a fair market value, PNM and all the other utilities they want to buy, or use a tool like eminent domain, which is essentially, it's outlined in the Constitution, but it's a very heavy-handed tool where the state would say, well, we deem that this is now going to be government property. We'll give you what we say is a fair market value, and you have to give up the goods. But it's happened. It's happened in recent memory on a utility issue here in the metro area. But it would be a huge expansion of government power in New Mexico. And, you know, right now it's just they haven't even gotten a study yet.
I would love to see an example of any state government, or for that matter, federal government agency running like the post office or anything else that has efficiencies better than private management, private ownership.
Well, there are government run utilities in New Mexico. One is up in Los Alamos and one is in Farmington. In fact, ironically, and this is where kind of logic starts to really break down on this stuff. The city of Farmington, which owns a share of San Juan Generating Station, that's the utility that New Energy Economy, PNM, and the Energy Transition Act are all pushing to shut down. Farmington wants to keep that open for their own economic interests in the Four Corners. And they're the ones that are working with a company called Enchant Energy, which would preserve San Juan Generating Station, institute what's called carbon capture technology up there, and they would then, instead of emitting the CO2 from burning coal into the atmosphere through a expensive, admittedly, a process, they would capture the CO2 from the coal plant, keep generating electricity, and then ship that CO2 to the oil patch where they use it in the generation of oil and gas. You need to push that oil and gas out of the ground, and CO2 would be then trapped under the earth's surface where the oil and gas used to be. Now, it's an innovative approach, and we'll see what happens. But I agree that it's a bad idea, especially the state level, because you're talking about a state that really doesn't manage itself very effectively. We're going to talk about that, I know. But the city of Farmington is a much different animal when it comes to what they care about and the idea of limited government in general. But they've had that state, that locally run utility. And I'm not advocating it, but it's kind of surprising how these things all work out in the end.
Well, in our next segment, and it's probably going to take up at least two segments, maybe the remaining part of the show, I'm going to ask Paul Gessing what he thinks about the governor's proposed budget. Now, if we were on YouTube, you would see fire coming out of this guy's ears and mouth. We'll be back with Paul Gessing, Rio Grande Foundation, right after these messages.
You've heard various radio spots on this station encouraging you to consider attending Calvary College. You may have thought, that's more than I can afford, or I'm not a very good student. I couldn't take on a load like that with my schedule. This is John Cho at O'Sullivan Boulevard Automotive in Rio Rancho. I'm a teacher's assistant here at Calvary College, and continued education in God's Word is something every Christian should consider. At the very least, a single class each semester is possible to handle by just about anyone. It's affordable, manageable, digestible, and able to equip you to help you and those around you grow in the Lord. You can even audit classes and gain the same knowledge.
Don't talk yourself out of continued education again. Connect with the friendly staff at Calvary College to find the perfect fit for you. John Chitwood did. CalvaryChurchCollege.com is the first step. CalvaryChurchCollege.com.
The largest investment for a family is their home. For decades, Carlos Griego and the team at Bosque Home Services has been taking care of houses. Now, here is Carlos talking with Jim Williams about some of the most common issues homeowners need to know about.
Carlos, tell us some of the common misconceptions between what maintenance is required on a refrigerated air system versus maybe a swamp cooling system.
A really common misconception with refrigerated air is that you only need to have it maintained every 3 to 4 years. Refrigerated air should be maintained every year. There's a lot of different things that can go wrong with that could be prevented, because 90% of our repairs are lack of maintenance. It's deferred maintenance. It's dirty coils.
Bosque Home Services, online at HVACAlbuquerqueNM.com or 444-7200. That's HVACAlbuquerqueNM.com or 444-7200.
You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We want to thank Ben Lucero and Indigo Mortgage for supporting the ministry of KLYT and ABQ Connect. Indigo Mortgage, 505-836-5700. That's 505-836-5700, or on the web at indigomortgage.net. Thank you, Indigo Mortgage, for your support of KLYT and ABQ Connect. Paul Gessing, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, in studio. Paul, what do you want the Rio Grande Foundation to be for our listeners and other people that use your websites?
A font of information for you as you consider issues, especially here in New Mexico, that are relevant to your life. And, you know, to really, and I think we've seen this may be one of the silver linings of the COVID situation. I think we'll talk about some of that at a future point, but to really understand that, yes, Washington is important. There are a lot of important issues discussed up there, but where it's at is really state and local government. And that's what we focus on. And that's what I think average citizens can have the most impact on. And that's what you all should be paying the most attention to. And we provide that, the information that educate folks on those issues.
So there's some paradoxical kinds of concerns. Most people know that Michelle Lujan Grisham, our governor, is a Democrat and has pretty much followed the Biden administration's interest in eliminating oil and gas. Yet the second half of 2021 was really a boom time for the oil and gas industry in New Mexico, because gas prices went up. Oil prices went up, gas prices went up, a lot of revenue generated. And I find it interesting that our governor takes credit for that, yet she wants to get rid of the industry. There were a whole bunch of stimulus monies and other things that were allocated to our state. We've got this surplus of money. So Let's start talking now about the governor's proposals and the things that you'd like to see changed.
Right. I would only say that Governor Lujan Grisham, in my opinion, actually very delicately tries to balance oil and gas and the money that she wants to flow into the state with placating her radical environmental base. And I would only point you to the previous discussion we had about the utilities and shutting down coal-fired power plants. She's tried to focus attention on other issues outside of anything that would negatively impact oil and gas. And I also want to note that the oil and gas boom that we are in the middle of is unprecedented really in New Mexico history, because it's not just about prices being high. It's about record amounts of production coming out of southeast New Mexico in the Permian Basin. And that is why we have, that's number one reason why we have this flood of new money coming into the state budget. And so back in the summertime, George Munoz, the head of the Senate Finance Committee in New Mexico, a Democrat, said we have more money than we know what to do with. And prices have only gone up. New Mexico is the second leading producer in the nation of oil. And obviously, gasoline prices are high despite all that production. So here we are swimming in money, a lot of it coming directly out of the oil patch. And we're looking at a session approaching, a 30-day session, where the number one thing they're supposed to do is pass a budget. The governor has put forth a proposal of 13.5% to increase spending by that amount in a single year, which is very, very significant. What we're talking about is taking the budget from $7.4 billion to $8.4 billion. That is a huge, huge increase. And, you know, it's going to dramatically expand the size of government. Now, being an individual liberty kind of person and somebody who studied history and economics, I believe that individuals have better means of spending money than the government. Government doesn't necessarily do things very effectively for a variety of reasons. So I would like to see money returned to the citizens, or given to the citizens in the form of tax reductions. Now, interestingly enough, the governor has said that she would be proposing a tax reduction. In her budget, which was released last week, though, she didn't include any language or line items to specifically talk about tax reductions. She did say that she wanted to decrease the gross receipts tax rate by 0.25%, which is a very tiny tax decrease, and it's really not what the serious issues are with the gross receipts tax, which we've discussed in other formats, but it really is a fundamentally flawed model. So I went back and looked at old budgets, because, of course, they're all online since we've had the internet now for a few decades. Bill Richardson, a very different politician, albeit a Democrat, you can bet that when he was putting his budgets out, he repeatedly and loudly proclaimed, as loudly as you can in a budget document on a piece of paper, I'm cutting taxes. And he did cut taxes. It is an absolute truth that Bill Richardson took our top income tax rate in the state of New Mexico, along with the legislature, Democrats mostly, from 8.2 to 4.9 when he was in office. He also cut capital gains taxes. He cut other taxes throughout his time in office. Now, that doesn't mean everything Bill Richardson did was good, but that is a absolute fact, and he repeatedly mentioned it in this old budget. Governor Lujan Grisham, I can't quite grapple with whether she really wants to take credit and push the tax cuts that she has proposed, or if she's really serious about it, but we're going to find out in this 30-day legislative session. So, the budget had a few other notable items. One is that she claims, this is current Governor Lujan Grisham, that she's created, and this is a direct line from the budget, we've created more jobs during the pandemic than the prior administration created in 8 years, roughly 40,000. Well, I've looked since the beginning of the pandemic. I've looked since the beginning of her term. And I can't figure it out, because Lujan Grisham, since the beginning of her time in office, is down 2.1% on the job sheet. We have 2.1% fewer jobs, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, than we had when she took office. And the same is true for even when you start a few months later during the pandemic. Now, if you start it when the most amount of people are laid off during the pandemic and count just the rebound. That may be an accurate statement, but that is a terrible approach to mathematics. Now, Martinez, just to compare, during her 8 years in office, the number of jobs grew by 7.1%, which is pretty slow by even New Mexico standards, but it is well above any reasonable mark that Lujan Grisham has. A couple other things. One is Lujan Grisham proposes $2.5 million in spending to create a 15-person climate change bureau. This strikes me as just another way to push her messaging through a paid group of employees that are kind of going to push the climate change agenda. And then I think this one really violates Christian principles in more in a profound way, which is that our governor touts repeatedly a cradle-to-career education system for all New Mexicans. Now, setting aside the abortion issue and, you know, the idea that government policies in the cradle or even in the womb, as espoused by our current governor, are not exactly pro-life, the idea that once that baby is in the cradle, that government should start meddling in their lives and really pushing policies, whether it's education or whatever, is highly questionable. Parents should be in charge of teaching their kids until they send them off to school, whether it's preschool or kindergarten. Government agents showing up at the house to help out with your six-month-old or do whatever they're going to do, whether it's help out or hurt in any way, shape, or form, I think is highly problematic. So we just take some real issue with some of the rhetoric and the concepts put into this budget.
Well, here's another example of a government. They are in charge of our public education system. And the record in New Mexico, according to Kids Count, you've said there's some bias built into this, but fourth grade reading levels, last in the country. Eighth grade math scores, last in the country. On-time graduation rates for high school students, again, this is the state of New Mexico, last in the country. So here's basically a service or an institution that the state is in charge of, and there's the track record.
Yeah, and it's, you know, we're heading into NFL playoff time. We just saw the college national championship. I like to use the analogy that New Mexico does not do the blocking and tackling aspect of football very well. You know, those are the basic skills upon which the game is built. We might be like a team that has a really nice quarterback but doesn't have an offensive line to protect him. And that's the New Mexico way. We tend to spend – our policymakers, elected officials, tend to spend a lot of money on splashy, fancy things, and we don't do the basics correctly. So we have a new pre-K system that we're going to be voting on in November, but – we have a K-12 system that is fundamentally flawed and challenged. And to add insult to injury, after our kids already lost a year of in the classroom time, Santa Fe Public Schools just announced yesterday that they're going to be doing virtual learning for a week or who knows, due allegedly to the COVID virus, when hopefully that does not spread, so to speak, outside of Santa Fe, the most liberal city in New Mexico and possibly the United States. But that is not going to help those kids, especially the poor and minority students who really don't have parents that can help them, internet connections and all the kinds of things that would give them a leg up. And unfortunately, our school systems do not perform well relative to other states.
We've said this many, many times. Whenever you're listening to a pastor or a preacher or a teacher talk about the Word of God, be sure and check out what they have to say. When you are listening to Paul Gessing, please check out what he has to say. And I am fully confident that you may not agree with him, but you're going to find out that the empirical evidence he presents, he has data for. He doesn't just make up numbers. He doesn't just say there's 40,000 more jobs that I've created in a state than the previous Republican administration. Here's another erroneous math deal. Biden administration is talking about unemployment being lower than it's been in years. That is just completely false, isn't it?
Well, it's not false in the way they measure unemployment, because you have to be looking for a job in order to be counted as looking for employment. However, if you look at unemployment and balance it against a statistic called workforce participation, which essentially measures the people who are 21 to 65 who are in the workforce, and you do a percentage of the population, most places are down. Most states are down in terms of the number of people working. So those folks, when they bail out of the workforce, they are not included in unemployment rates. And Biden can claim, although in a flawed way, that that he's doing something positive for the economy. Now, it's really interesting, because if you look at the red states, most of them that didn't lock down, that have good tax policy and economic policy, they're doing very well. Their unemployment rates are low. Workforce participation's recovered. New Mexico, not so much. Our workforce participation remains much below where it was at the beginning of the pandemic. And we were one of the lowest states in terms of workforce participation before that. So, yeah, there's a lot of half-truths being set out there. And just another one to throw out is, you know, we're talking about employees taking home bigger checks. Businesses are paying more for their workers. But on the flip side, with inflation running rampant, 7%, even the governor's education spending, where she's going to be putting forth a 7% increase for those folks without any attachment to results and outcomes for the students, you know, you're not really seeing that much improvement in your standard of living, because inflation is the hidden tax that really destroys everybody's wealth and prosperity. And unfortunately, back to Biden, he's really allowed inflation to grow rampant by overspending.
Paul, we need to take a quick break and say thank you to a couple more sponsors. But when we come back, I'm going to ask you one more budget question, and that's related to spending on law enforcement. And then we'll get into some of the lockdowns, COVID mandates, mask mandates, all that stuff. We'll be back with Paul Gessing, Rio Grande Foundation, right after this.
Here's a fundamental point from Skip Heitzig.
With the Christian life, it begins with birth. You must be born again, Jesus said. But it continues with growth, with development, with a blossoming, with maturity.
Hotspot. Skip continues in this hotspot.
You can grow as much as you want. As much as you want. Because you have access to God's power.
Unlock thousands of True the Bible teachings at connectwithskip.com. Connectwithskip.com.
You can always tell how mature a Christian is by how that person treats God's promises.
Skip has this to say to lock down this hotspot.
But sanctification, that's teamwork. That's teamwork. You just don't sit back and watch it happen. You are involved in the process. Spiritual growth is never accidental. It is always intentional. Hotspot.
A person of influence. This is Roger Patterson with a Minute of Vision for Life. People today are desperate for leadership. So often we limit our scope of influence, and we don't even realize that we have the opportunity to make a difference in the lives of everyone with whom we come in contact. Tony Dungy shares his experience growing up and visiting his uncles and aunts in their homes in his book Uncommon Life, Daily Challenge. You clearly see the impact that they made in his life through their leadership. You know, we need to broaden our vision and realize the influence that we carry to our extended family, to our friends, and our coworkers, even the people we just pass throughout the day. In Matthew 5:14, Jesus says, "You are the light of the world, like a city on a hilltop that cannot be hidden. No one lights a lamp and then puts it under a basket. Instead, a lamp is placed on a stand where it gives light to everyone in the house." Go be that light.
You've been listening to Dr. Roger Patterson with A Minute of Vision, a ministry of Vision for Life Radio, where faith and sports collide at visionforlife.org.
From the KLYT Broadcast Studios, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
ABQ Connect would like to thank Essenmacher Family Dental for their support of KLYT, with services including children's dentistry, preventive dentistry, and more. Their new Albuquerque office is located at 8310 Palomas Avenue Northeast, Suite C, 505-372-0086, or online at snmacherdental.com. Paul Gessing, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, in studio with me. Paul, I think that figuring out a lot of this political stuff for me is really complicated. But when I hear you speak about potential answers and problem solving, they may be hard, but they don't seem complicated.
Right.
They seem like, okay, yeah, hard work is different than being complicated. And yep. So I guess I'm asking, do you ever lose hope when you look at our situation? We were talking off the air a little bit about California, and they seem to be almost going over the cliff.
Well, I have not lost hope in New Mexico yet. And I do really think that, you know, and I know we'll talk multiple times throughout this year, 2022, this is a incredibly important year, and every election seems important, but I think if we have four more years of this governor, that will put us as a state in a serious situation that could be problematic. I think we really need to change the leadership of our state and move in a more free market, limited government direction, because, you know, back 20 years ago, and I mean, Bill Clinton, you gotta love him or you don't love him, whatever you may think. But the idea of the Democratic Party in that time period was to improve conditions for working people. It might be some more regulation than I would like. It might be doing this, that, and the other that I might dislike. But now the mindset seems to be, let's put as many people as we can on the government dole, and then they'll vote for us. And that is a very dangerous proposition. You cannot have a preponderance of a citizenry dependent on government and then expect them to vote against that government and vote for freedom. So, it's never completely worth giving up hope, because even in the darkest days of the Soviet Union, the Berlin Wall eventually fell. Now, the Russian culture hasn't evolved towards great freedom, but it's, I do think that, we have a very important cycle here this time around for New Mexico. We've seen some good, things happen at the city council level, at the school board level, but it can't just stop with those. We need a few years to really change New Mexico for the better.
You know, they're very simple biblical principles too. Again, hard things to do, but not complicated. And one of those is the Bible teaches us that we should care about other people as more important than ourselves. We should look out for the interest of other people. So I think to our people in public service, and I'm thankful that they do that, because that's tough. I watch these campaigns. I look how they get after each other from both sides. I would not want to wish that on anybody's family. I mean, it's got to be really difficult. But at the same time, you've got to do things with integrity. You have to do things, in my opinion, the way God designed them. And then, you know, things take care of, God takes care of us when we do what he wants us to do. And it's not laborious. It's actually kind of wonderful when you just do the right thing. And there's occasion mm-hmm. when you see something really nice and really truth comes out and somebody does something good. And I know I've made a zillion mistakes. I'd love to see one politician go, you know what? That thing I voted for last year was the wrong thing. I'm changing my opinion, and I'm going to change it now. I don't ever see that happen, though, Paul.
It rarely happens. And I want to take a step back to talk about kind of, and this is a very short point, but it does have a lot to do with the biblical and Christian perspective when you talk about capitalism. There's a lot of people say, oh, Jesus was a socialist and this, that, and the other. Well, the reality is that capitalism, you know, Jeff Bezos, one of the richest people, the richest person in the world, I think, all the way down to the owner of your local diner, the way they earn money and success is by serving other people and giving them what they want and need. You can order things on Amazon, and it's something that throughout human history, we could not have fathomed going on to a computer and saying, I want whatever it may be, deodorant, to a new computer, to some other consumer item and then having it delivered to your door. It's incredible. And we could argue whether that's entirely a good thing or not, but it's the same for your small restaurant owner who they need to give people good food and a good atmosphere that people want to come back to and be a part of. It's the same exact idea throughout all of capitalism. Capitalism, you get the idea, oh, it's dog eat dog, it's everybody for themselves. Well, in reality, the way you become an excellent capitalist and become wealthy is by serving other people, because it's a voluntary transaction. In capitalism, nobody can force you to use their product. And we see that nowadays with some of these woke corporations. It may be tough to give up your Starbucks drink, but if you don't think they should be forcing vaccinations on all of their employees, which they are, you can go get a different coffee drink from somewhere else. And that's the reality of capitalism and freedom. It's government that says, we're going to take your money and then force you to have this product that may or may not be what you want or as good as it could be. And you need to look no further than the education system to see how that whole proposition has not worked out to our benefit.
Well, one of the things I want to address, the last thing about budget, is we all know, and many of us, and most of us, if not all of us, have been affected by the just unbelievable amount of crime. You know, home burglaries, car thefts, vandalism. I mean, you name it, it seems to be rampant throughout New Mexico. Is the governor going to spend any of the budget addressing any of that?
So the short answer is to an extent, and I was with a group of business people this morning speaking to them, there were several folks who said that they have serious issues, kind of copper theft and people breaking and entering. And there was a situation where an inspector actually came upon in a building copper thieves, and they called the police, and the police said, this is not an emergency, not knowing whether the thieves were armed or anything, but telling them to call the non-emergency number. Now, the governor has a role to play in crime, and she is indeed providing millions of dollars for more state police officers, and that is welcome. Now, that's not the end of the game when it comes to crime, and something that's troubling in not only her budget, but it's worth noting that it's not just the governor, it's the legislature. They both put budgets forth, and the legislature is controlled by Democrats, so they're going to put a Democrat-oriented budget, but it's going to differ from the governor. When it comes to state prisons, the governor is basically putting that as a flat spending item, no increase, and the legislative budget, LFC, Legislative Finance Committee, is cutting money for the prisons. Now, we sit here in Albuquerque and we think, how in the heck are we cutting prisons at a time when the city of Albuquerque is setting record homicide numbers? And I talked to a state police officer friend of mine, not to be named, but he said, look, it's the judges. So I can't truly blame the governor directly for this. I do blame Mayor Keller, because he has the police department and he can do a lot to really clean up Albuquerque in a way that I think a governor just can't do. But this comes down to how voters vote on the stinking judges when they have them on the ballot, and not just voting for the Democrats because they've always voted for the Democrats, but voting for people and trying to do some research. And it's tough. It's a messed up system. It doesn't work, but we definitely need to change direction in addition to all the other things, the way the judicial system works in this state and the catch and release mentality that so often prevails.
Yeah, the catch and release thing and putting ankle braces on doesn't keep somebody from committing crimes. And that's been proven time and time again.
And just flat out the philosophy of the state of New Mexico, the people that we have as parents and families and churches on down, reiterating that private property is literally the sweat of someone's brow. It represents their time, their intellect, and their hard work, and that is something that is precious. And taking that from them, I mean, obviously it's in the Ten Commandments, do not steal, but it's something that we just don't seem to have a strong cultural awareness of in New Mexico, and unfortunately, it makes all of us less well off than we could be.
Paul, I know this is a 30-day session. Those are typically called budget sessions.
Typically.
And there's little things that get snuck in. On Friday of this week, I'm going to have Zachary Fort. He's the president of the New Mexico Shooting Association. I just wanted to mention that to you because he's anticipating some gun control things, because as soon as we start talking about crime, one party in particular likes to blame the crime on the guns.
Yeah, and that is obviously something that Zach knows more about than I do, but I do expect some crime legislation specifically on, on gun legislation specifically on gun storage. We saw the tragedy right at the beginning of the school year where the young boy was killed by a classmate who had brought a gun to school. The parents had not stored it correctly, but when you really think about it, how is passing a law that requires you to store a gun correctly going to prospectively help in cases like that? Because the government's not going to, no matter how totalitarian we may become in the near future, the government's not going to send police and government agents door to door to ensure that your gun is stored correctly. That's just not going to happen. And the idea that you just pass a law and that changes the way everybody uses guns and it makes it suddenly responsible, I think is crazy. It gets back to property rights. It gets back to responsible citizenship and being a good person and not using a gun in dangerous and unnecessary ways. And there's a lot of very Second Amendment friendly states, including but not limited to New Hampshire. You look at their gun ownership and their level of crime, it's dwarfed by what we have here in New Mexico. And it's really just a mentality and a personal responsibility issue.
And I think it has a lot to do with all the things we've been talking about so far today. Jobs. People have less stress when they actually have a job.
Yep.
And there's economic development. We talked not so long ago about our negative population growth in the state, that we're not attracting a lot of new jobs and a lot of new industries. So New Mexico, we're talking about all this. We hope that everybody's engaging in the conversation. And by the way, not asking anybody to agree with what is said here. What I'm hoping you'll do is go to places like the RioGrandeFoundation.org, go to errorsofenchantment.com, two websites that Paul manages, and look at the information. And then maybe go compare that to some other sites that you read. But do the research. Get ready to vote. We have a big election coming up in November.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of feel like the last election, we didn't do well. And we really need to get people educated, prepared, and let's do some things that's best for all of us here in the state of New Mexico. Paul Gessing, you're going to be here one more segment with us, and we can't go away without talking about COVID. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Here's Mike Fabares, Bible teacher on Focal Point.
You know, worship is not easy. Real worship is hard because it requires that we put the emphasis and attribute the credit to someone else. Our flesh desires to receive the credit for everything we have. But the core of worship is acknowledging that God is the source of every good thing we experience. Our flesh really struggles to relinquish that kind of praise. Deuteronomy 8 says that you might start saying to yourself that your power or your strength have produced wealth for you. But remember, it's the Lord God who gives you the ability to produce wealth. So whether it's a comfortable income, a capable mind, good health, loyal relationships, may our worship be inspired by a humble thanks and a complete dependence upon Him.
Hungry for more? Get hard-hitting, straight-up Bible teaching with Pastor Mike Fabares on Focal Point's half-hour program right here on this station. And learn more about Pastor Mike when you visit us online at focalpointradio.org.
The most important information anyone can receive comes from an understanding of the Bible. Only here do we find direct revelation about all things related to life and relationship with God. Life does not always provide us with time or opportunity to break away and study the Bible full time. That's why KLYT is dedicated to presenting round-the-clock teaching by some of the best communicators we can find about Scripture Scripture and how it relates to our lives. We need to be exposed to the full counsel of God's Word. KLYT presents the Bible School of the Air. Each Saturday, starting at 12, KLYT will present Through the Bible verse-by-verse teachings by Chuck Smith, Skip Heitzig, and Chuck Missler, followed by a question-and-answer session with Scott Richards. Drop into our Bible journey at any time and go through the entire Word of God with us. The KLYT Bible School of the Air. Tuition is free. The rewards are eternal. Saturdays at 12 on 88.3 FM.
Pastor Drew here, and I want to invite you to check out Calvary Church Westside. We have so much to offer your family, from kids to student ministries, all the way to young adults. Church happens this Sunday on Corso Montano. Calvary Church Westside, where church is family.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
I can't say the word science and government in the same sentence because the government has no idea what science is, Paul. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, it's gotten pretty bad out there, and unfortunately, that leaves average people with their own devices trying to parse through what winds up being massive media, massive political disinformation. The health establishment won't give us straight answers, and it's incredibly frustrating. But because we care about freedom, and because COVID has been used in ways really largely unprecedented in American history to take away freedoms, let alone what we've seen internationally in places like Australia and Europe, and the way they've locked down their populations, and even setting up camps for them to go where they're unvaccinated. But here's a few important things to know what's going on with COVID. One is, on Friday, New Mexico had more COVID cases reported to the state than had ever been reported in a single day before, including the very, very worst times pre-vaccine in the early parts of 2020. Yet, we are one of just a handful of states. Washington, Oregon, California, Hawaii, Illinois, and New Mexico are the only states with universal indoor mask mandates. Clearly, that policy has not been working very well. And then, and there are different data sources you can use, but pretty much from day one, I've used something called WorldOmeters. They have an excellent COVID tracking device on their website. According to that website, you know, we've heard in the media from liberal politicians, oh, South Dakota, oh, they never locked down. They were totally open. Kristi Noem, their governor. Oh, Florida, Ron DeSantis. I mean, their hashtag DeathSantis trended for weeks on end on Twitter because of the level of vitriol in the media and among left-wing politicians and many left-wing people about those policies, the lack of lockdown mentality in Florida and South Dakota. Well, I've got news for you. Go to WorldOmeters and you can plug it in right now. Deaths per million population. South Dakota is below New Mexico, and the trend is their friend. They are going to see further declines relative to New Mexico. And Florida is one slot above New Mexico and dropping fast. In a recent day, they had four people in Florida, a much bigger population state, die of COVID, and we had on the order of 26. That is a excellent way to close the gap. Now, it's tragic, it's unfortunate, but among many other things, our governor has been locked down, social distancing. The Department of Health, if you go on their website, is even now again pushing masks for outdoor activities, for outdoor people doing things outdoors, let alone kids in school, kids on the basketball court. All of those are things I vehemently disagree with, and I don't think the science supports any of them, and the science keeps coming out in ways that reflect what we've said, even though I don't pretend to be a scientist. And folks like Kristi Noem in South Dakota, Ron DeSantis in Florida are being proven right. Now, Ron DeSantis in particular has been using more innovative treatments, monoclonal antibodies, which when you get sick with COVID can help save your life. Now, they have them available in New Mexico, but you got to go three pages deep on the Department of Health website. And if you've ever heard the governor, David Scrace, her health advisor, talk about monoclonal antibodies, please let me know, because there has been a lot of press conferences over the last 2 years, and I have yet to hear our governor tout a treatment like monoclonal antibodies. And they're not the only ones. She also hasn't exactly talked about obesity. Ron DeSantis talked about obesity as a pre-existing condition that can exacerbate COVID. There are numerous things that intelligent politicians who are willing to think outside the carrot and stick approach of vaccinate, mask, and social distance that are being tried. And they're evidently having a lot more success in South Dakota and Florida over time as we see these numbers develop.
I find it interesting that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, caught COVID apparently in Florida. She, of course, is a congresswoman from New York. I would be willing to bet you that she wasn't wearing her mask when she was in Florida, although she would tout exactly what you were talking about. Yeah, we should have indoor masks, we should have outdoor masks, and yet I bet you she wasn't.
And they have a vaccine mandate, I think, for kids over five in New York, where she is from. Now, if you give me a plane ticket from New York City to Florida in early January, I'm there. Don't get me wrong, but AOC has been a classic left-wing lockdown guilt trip. Anybody who doesn't agree with you, call, you know, Death Santas and say he's doing an awful job. And yet she does go down to Florida. Now, I believe that everybody's going to get COVID more or less given the current situation with Omicron. It is spreading, spreads fast. It is mostly relatively benign, like a cold. And even if you're vaccinated, you're getting COVID-19 because the vaccines just aren't effective as much against the against receiving, getting the virus, getting sick to an extent. Now, I still believe the vaccines have a role to play, especially for people who are compromised in some ways or older, that they should get vaccinated, and they will help you stave off the worst situations, you know, hospitalizations and death from COVID, but it hasn't worked out as the experts told us at the beginning when the vaccines were new and everybody had just started getting them. But yeah, it is amazing to me the hypocrisy of a self-described socialist like AOC, who goes off and parties and enjoys herself in Florida, a state that she's roundly criticized online and in her talks and whatnot. And yet they go and enjoy the freedom that Florida has to offer. And it's the height of hypocrisy.
Paul, we've only got about a minute and a half left, so I've got to choose one of the remaining four or five topics. And I'm going to ask you about the voting bill, I guess, that's been proposed. They're talking about 16-year-olds voting now.
Yeah, this is a state bill coming up in the session. This is something the governor put forth just last week, and among the provisions would be to allow 16 and 17-year-olds to vote in local elections. That's deeply problematic. 16 and 17-year-olds are by and large not taxpayers in any significant way. They're not very knowledgeable about the conditions of our state and our history and our country. I'm not saying that 21 or 18-year-olds are better, but I don't think you're doing yourself any favor by having more low-information voters dumped into the pool. Now, there's other provisions in the bill that are to be concerned about. One is automatically registering people to vote with a transaction at the MVD. Again, there's nothing difficult about getting registered to vote. You can go to the post office. You can go online and find a universal voting form and send that in. It's very, very simple. Another one is creating a permanent absentee voter list. Now, why do you have a permanent list of anything? Because people are constantly coming and going, moving around, dying, etc. It just doesn't make any sense. You still need to look at that list and make sure that it's accurate. And if you have a permanent list, that's not doing what you're supposed to do.
As always, Paul, it's so interesting. Thank you so much for spending the time with us.
All right, it's the fastest hour in radio.
ABQ Connect is presented by Bosky Heating and Cooling, 505-444-7200. Bosky Heating and Cooling, locally grown, locally owned. ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of staff or management at KLYT. If you missed any or part of today's show, the podcast can be found at abqconnect.online.